The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
We interrupt this program for no reason. Had there been a reason, you'd have been asked to go along with it and perhaps even take off your pants. But there is no reason, so now we return you to the program.
Hey, everybody. This is John Namath, and you're listening to the man, the myth, and the legend, Frank Cardillo on Cardillo Chronicles.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cardillo.
The assignment was to take the hill. There were four of us, five if you count Vicente, but he had lost his hand when a grenade went off and couldn't fight as he could when I first met him. And he was young and brave, and the hill was soggy from days of rain, and it sloped down toward a road, and there were many German soldiers on the road. And the idea was to aim for the first group, and if our aim was true, we could delay them.
Were you scared?
Of what?
Getting killed?
You'll never write well if you fear dying. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'd say it's probably, might be my greatest fear, actually.
But it's something all men before you have done, all men will do.
I know.
Have you ever made love to a truly great woman?
Actually, my fiance is pretty sexy.
And when you make love to her, you feel true and beautiful passion, and you, for at least that moment, lose your fear of death.
No, that doesn't happen.
I believe that love that is true and real creates a respite from death. All cowardice comes from not loving or not loving well, which is the same thing. And when the man who is brave and true looks death squarely in the face, like some rhino hunters I know, or Belmonte, who's truly brave, it is because they love with sufficient passion to push death out of their minds until it returns, as it does to all men. And then you must make really good love again. Think about it.
And then you must make love again. Wake up, it's night, everyone. The Barter Broadcasting is on the air. It's me, Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, and I'm chronicling again tonight. neo-postmodernists and you sunburnt sicklemen of September weary, come hither from the furrow and be merry. It's time once again for philosophical entertainment, relevant irreverence, and that's right, I couple service in the hoax and infomaniacs. Enter the theater. One, come all. Y2K plus 14. 4th of September. Beware the Ides of September. Let's go. Our minds are craving this kind of attention. So here we go. That's right, from ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. Let's have the boys with the zithers haven't been here in a long time. My wibbles, my wums, my washing, my vodka. My goodness. 1, 2, 3. I am the third man. I am the man who takes you down the hallelujah trail. My pals with the zither, orchestrating the beginning of this journey through awareness. Let's call it awareness. No yoga, no spiritual mumbo-jumbo. Just paying attention to whatever the mind wants to think. Neo-postmodernists, must we label ourselves? Well, it's all happening right here. I am the third man, and he's the guy. You don't know if he's really there. You see him, you hear him, you don't know. It's just another one of the motifs we have encouraged through the many, many years of this chronicling that I've done. Think about it. So let's just open up the grape leaves, suck what's in them out of them, and live a little, dance a little, and then we'll talk. No royalties on this. It's a neo-post-modern composition. Plus 14, September the 4th. And just when you think you've seen everything you can, you see the first, the second, but not the third man. Yes, right. That's right. So this never-ending summer, this machine of a season that's moving along with such propensity. And you hear it? Here's the machine. You hear it? Can you hear it? Hear that machine? That's the motor of this show, which is a show, not a program, because it ain't planned at all. It's just me, Frank Atolo, the man's name, but doing the title show, the Bard of Broadcasting, taking every aspect of talk radio. Hear the crickets? It's probably one like right here, along with spiders and mosquitoes and every little thing, because this never-ending summer that has been pouring the heat on. There it goes. Now you can just hear the crickets. It's the audience, not you guys. Very quiet when you're listening. Breaking every rule of talk radio and creating an entirely new platform for talk radio where I talk. No one else talks. This is a solo. This is a drum solo, as Kurt Brando labeled my solo shows. This is the show, the kind of show, which is me and you. This one-to-one translation of thought, feeling, emotion. Because I don't turn on any particular part of myself to get this going. I mean, I don't click into a role. I don't put on a mask or a wig or a tie. I just talk. And this is what it's like to be with me. And I'm happy to say that through the years, and there have been many, and I don't even want to think about it. Through the years, these have been the extremely popular shows, me and you. That doesn't mean, and I don't mean to belittle or make any kind of pejorative statement. This and another thing is, it's like, you know, doesn't it sound like I'm hooked up to something? Like this is how he goes. Okay, he's got a cord coming out of this side, and that's me. Those are just my. It's not like I mean to be pejorative to the people who guest on this show now and then, come by, talk through Skype or what have you, and all the things that we do with other people. They're all very nice. I hate that word. They're all pleasant, smart. Many are smarter than I. But I just want to once again tell you and thank you for paying so much attention to the attention that I ask you to pay. Nothing else do I ask you to pay for. And when you listen to these solo shows, this is the way it began back in the days of internet radio's Paleozoic era. And what we could call it, the early days of internet radio. I don't even call it internet radio. I don't know what to call it anymore, because it's going to be in cars and trucks and boats and planes and noodle salad sooner or later. I did want to, a couple of things I had on my mind before I get into this topic, which, of course, the topics, when they show up, they're on my Facebook page, Frank Cotola, if you want to be my friend and see that page. And CotolaChronicles.blogspot.com. Do you believe that there was a gap there? So what's that? What website is that? The blog, CotolaChronicles.blogspot.com, where we explain what we're going to do to some extent when it's time to do it. But there's a couple of things I did want to say, especially even though I never want this show to be timely. All right. But a couple of weeks ago, we did the Jeremy Long and I created the Dead Comics Society. And I want to thank people for writing in fcotolo@yahoo.com, giving me some ideas. And it came up again. You know, we do these things. We've created a number of societies and organizations. Of course, the Liquid Water Society and any number of others. But the Dead Comics Society came about because of Robin Williams, who was in Dead Poets Society. Of course, Robin Williams committed suicide. That pretty much ended his life. And then, well, you know, so we started this thing where we had all these dead comics would be part of this, just the way in Dead Poets Society, they have to be dead poets, you have to be dead comics. And then it came up again today when Joan Rivers passed away. And something came to my mind that was not related to that. Of course, she joins easily, without a doubt. I'm going to write her right in here, because I have a number of... Hear that? I'm writing. You're hearing it. Joan Rivers needs no introduction to the Dead Comic Society. She was a genius. I didn't know her, but I knew of her. I'll tell you how I knew of her. Because until her dying day, I believe this is true, until her dying day. Although I don't think of, you know, the last week, she was in such bad shape, I don't think she was buying jokes. But Joan Rivers was a great purchaser of jokes for joke writers. And back in the old days of Robin Williams and the Comedy Store and all that, Joan Rivers would pay, you know, the going rate back in those days, and for her, all what I'm trying to tell you is that always, as the years went on, Joan Rivers paid $5 a joke. Any joke you gave her was $5. You would get $5, and it was hers. Now, $5 a joke was a very popular price. That was the price. It was kind of like at the racetrack, the $2 bet has been the standard bet. And there ain't any number of other, I don't know, is there still penny chewing gum? I don't think so. But there's a number of things that have stayed the same over the years, over the decades. And the $5 joke was also, but you would think it would go up, and it did with some comedians who were buying jokes as the decades ensued would give you more. We've talked about when Rodney Dangerfield died, we talked about Rodney Dangerfield giving $25 to $50. He actually had his own little scale in terms of a joke he liked it. So he bought jokes. You know, you didn't. You might not know the jokes were purchased by people who wrote them and sold them. Okay. I think I've gone through that enough over the past couple of decades. Have we been here in decades? What's my point? My point is Joan Rivers still paid $5. The last I heard, and that was a couple of years ago, from an old friend who still wrote jokes, she got $5. Just give her. You can walk up to her anywhere. You know, if you're in Vegas and she was playing or something like that, tell her the joke, $5, bingo. If she had it, she'd give it to you right there and then. Just take out a $5 bill. But the other thing about Joan Rivers that came to mind was something that I was talking about the other day to someone, and I've talked about many times to many people, not just to someone, to some people. And that is the number, the amazing number, the humongous number, the big number of celebrities, not just comics, but celebrities who were born in Brooklyn, New York. Joan Rivers being one of them. I don't know what it is about Brooklyn other than the fact that if Manhattan, Kansas had as many people, if it had as dense a population as Brooklyn, New York, perhaps there would be thousands, and there are thousands of celebrities of all kinds, singers, dancers, actors, comedians. Perhaps Manhattan, Kansas would have produced thousands of people. It would have been big if it had been, as Brooklyn is, the third largest city in the world. So I guess what I'm saying, and I don't guess what I'm saying, I know what I'm saying, is that there are so many people there, the chances, mathematical possibilities of many people coming out of there who are talented is very great because of the density of people. But it's also the lifestyle that a lot of these people grew into, the ethnic neighborhood, densely populated world that encourages art. I don't know why. I don't have a degree in sociology. I just am aware of this, that so many people who come from a place and are raised in a place that has so many people, somehow or other, turn out to be artistic. Joan Rivers being one of them. And here's what I wanted to do, and I'm going to do very quickly, because there are still people who are alive that I know of these people existing. I know that a lot of their work, but I don't know where they were born, where they originated. I'm shocked at some of the people who I didn't even know were from Brooklyn or from Brooklyn. And I've gone back. I've been through this. I can't even tell you how many times. When Tom Savino's on the show, or maybe he'll talk about it again too. How many people? But listen to this. And this is, I don't know why this is in A to Z. Sort by, I don't know, it's sort by, listen to this, just at random. These people were born in Brooklyn. And the first one, I didn't know Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway, the actress, young actress. You know her. We all know her. Don't we? Born in Brooklyn. Adam Sandler, that is not that's very obvious. Don't you think? And the kind of Brooklyn type thing. Listen to this. Lauren Bacall. I didn't know Lauren Bacall, who was born Betty Joan Persky. I didn't know Lauren Bacall was born in Brooklyn. I did not know that. We all know Woody Allen was born in Brooklyn. He talks about it many times in his work, including what we played in the collage, of course, that part of Ernest Hemingway played by some guy who I don't know that actor's name, but maybe he's from Brooklyn. I'm not talking about New York now. I'm just talking about one of the boroughs, Brooklyn, New York, I'm talking about. Okay, I'm not talking about anywhere else but Brooklyn. This is where they were born. I didn't know Marissa Tomei. Marissa Tomei was born in Brooklyn. Steve Buscemi was born in Brooklyn. Joan Rivers just added here, of course. Eddie Murphy was born in Brooklyn. I don't have to keep saying was born in Brooklyn. Let me just give you some. Lorraine Bracco. Remember her from many movies? The one with Sean Connery, where he found a cure for cancer. And Lorraine Bracco. Jimmy Fallon. I didn't know Jimmy Fallon was from Brooklyn. I don't know what gives it. What is it? The name? I don't know. He was. Is he born? Is his real name? His name is Jimmy Fallon. Okay. Moore. I didn't know he was Lou Ferrigno. And one day I'll tell you my Lou Ferrigno story if I haven't told you that. He's from Brooklyn. Lee Remini is from Brooklyn. I keep saying he's from Brooklyn. I shouldn't say that, right? Eli Wallach. Now Mary Tyler Moore, I knew from way back. Mary Tyler Moore. I didn't know her. What I mean is she was born in Flatbush. And she's unknown. Well, maybe if you don't know it, it's not known. That's a very popular section of Brooklyn. John Turturro, Barbara Streisand, Harvey Keitel, Richard Dreyfuss. I didn't know Richard Dreyfuss. Doesn't say where. Who else? Mickey Rooney. We know that. Mel Brooks. We know. I didn't know that. Here's one I did not know. Priscilla Presley, who was Priscilla Ann Wagner. She was born in Brooklyn. I didn't know that. Jerry Seinfeld, we knew, didn't we? I think we did. Elliot Gould, we knew he was married to Barbara Streisand. We were Streisand at one time. Jessica Walter. Let me just go through these. Rita Hayworth? Rita Hayworth? Carmen Cancino? I'm still shocked at some of these people that I didn't know. You know Larry David? That makes sense. We know that one. Gilbert Gottfried, I didn't know, was a Brooklyn guy. Martin Landau, did not know that. Chuck Connors, I knew. Tony Danza, I knew because there's a supermarket. I think I mentioned this before. There's a supermarket. They call it Danza. It's named after Tony Danza. Danza. Danza's, it's called. I don't know if it's there anymore. I have no idea. And some of these actors whose names, whose faces I know, I didn't know their name. Tony Sirico from Goodfellas. I know him too. William Forsythe. You know him. We know these guys. I know them by that. Rhea Perlman. We know her from Ricky Schroeder. Louis Gossett Jr. Come on. Gene Tierney was born in Brooklyn. Jimmy Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel? Dom DeLuise. That's easy. D.D. Kahn, once my neighbor in Hollywood, California. Did not know she was born in Brooklyn. She's only a year younger than I. John Saxon, the actor Paul Sorvino, Gabe Kaplan. Gabe Kaplan was born. Jackie Gleason, we know. See, I'm telling you ones I know. You might not know any of these. I can keep going. Should I? Anyway, Susan Hayward, famous actor. I'm just looking at ones I still... Richard Lewis, that makes sense. Okay. Connie Stevens. Buddy Hackett? Okay, some I know, some I don't know. I know Mike Tyson, the fighter, was born in Brooklyn. What the heck? I got to go through this list. I'm fascinated at the ones I don't... Vanessa Williams, hello. Born in Bed-Stuy. I did not know so many of these. Anyway, who's that? One more. Let me go one more page here, just to see what we're doing. Lena Horne. I didn't know. Lena Horne? Did not know Lena Horne was born in Brooklyn. Paul Mazursky, the actor? and the director did not know that. So there's still so many. Michael Lerner, you know, Michael Lerner, Kenny Lerner. I just saw Kenny Lerner in a movie, in a TV show, League. I knew Kenny. He's still doing commercials and stuff. That's Michael Lerner's brother. I even knew Kenny Lerner and Michael. I did not know they were from Brooklyn. Okay. So even people I knew. Well, in any event, and in all events, and I'm going through Colin Quinn. Okay, fine. Joe Turkel from The Shining. I don't know him. Then there's ones who I know just by sight. Okay, so there you go. Joan Rivers not only joins the Dead Comic Society, she's also another Brooklyn comic down. 81, okay. Well, we were talking about some of these other ones in the society. They go a long way from 81, like Mitch Hedberg, John Candy, John Belushi, Freddie Prinze, Phil Hartman, Sam Kinison, John Ritter. Long way, George Miller. A long way from 81. So anyway, Joan, I'm sure one day we'll talk. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. I don't know what's happening over the course of September on this show. We don't know what's going to happen from one time to the next. I know what I want to happen, and I will continue to try to make those things happen. Of course, I never rehearse, but I'm always prepared when comes time on a Thursday evening live on SRN. And probably you're listening not live. Probably you're listening on live. What I mean is if you're not listening, you're live. If you're not listening to the live broadcast, you're listening on one of the other great stations that run this show over and over again. And dare, oh, there goes my, it's like I'm some kind of a machine here, right? The many of the other great stations playing the show, I would give you their names right off the bat, but I'll be dropping names, and I'll forget some of them. And there are always new ones. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Why? Because I need that many listeners? I don't know. You can get in touch with me as you want, fcotolo@yahoo.com or any other place. Go to Facebook or what have you. What we're going to talk about on this particular show is going to happen here shortly. Once again, I found an article that we're going to use as the basis of this discussion. Because, you know, we're kind of into science in a way here. We have Dr. Woldar and Skylar and a lot of R's, A-R's. Oh, wait a second. Do you know who else was born in Brooklyn? Speaking of science, how many times have we talked about science and mentioned this guy's name? How many times have I done my ridiculous impression of him? How many times? Billions and billions of times that I've done it. Yeah, Carl Sagan's from Brooklyn. Hello? Do you ever think, you know, you people out there, you people, who, if you, you know, just when you think you know it all, you don't know half of it, which could be another title to a book. I know last week I did the book title thing with Jeremy and Tom Savino was here, but we didn't finish. Just when you, well, you find it, you don't know half. What did I just say? I don't remember. We'll figure it out again like this. I'm still going to write more titles because they come along. Just when you think you know everything, you find out you don't know the half of it. You write that down, right? You write the book. Carl Sagan on that list, I would have never... That could be one of those hashtag from at midnight on the show there, right? We could have a hashtag wars. No, that wouldn't be hashtag wars. That would just be a list. Nothing's no hashtag wars. Hashtag stars from Brooklyn. Go, let's do that right now. Let's get it trending. Everybody who knows stars from Brooklyn, go to Twitter, go to your account, hashtag stars from Brooklyn. Carl Sagan. Someone put Carl Sagan for me and then continue on your own. This will be right. Talk among yourselves. Tweet among yourselves while you're at it, okay? My name is Frank Cotolo. The man's name adorns the title of the show. I'm chronicling on this particular thing. We talk about science. We always talk about theater drama and the form of drama, the job of the artist, and why stories that are told aren't like life, and, you know, the whole deal. the kind of things you just don't hear about. And if you understood more about these things, you'd probably not listen to those other guys. Let's all stop listening to those other guys. I don't even want to mention their names anymore. They sicken me. They sicken me. But we talk about science and we talk about movies and theater and books and noodle salad. So I found this thing by Greg Miller. Let me put the cough button. I can't put the... I gotta clear my throat. I'm not going to put that. You hear that? Hear that? You hear that? I have my beverages. You should have yours. See, this is what happens. My coffee here, which is black as hell, strong as death. And again, sweet as love. It's half as sweet as love. It's not bitter anymore because I started putting one sugar back in. Okay. I'm drinking out of a travel mug while I do the show. For fear of falling. What is fear of falling? Is that fall of phobia? I don't know. When we talk about science, we talk about movies. But listen to this. How movies trick your brain into empathizing with characters. Oh, this didn't like grab my attention right away. Right? the whole world is in turmoil. Crazy people are out there taking over countries. Bombs are falling. People are hating other people because they're the hateiest, they're the ugliest people in the world. And everything's, you know, nothing. What changes? All right. Like you march through the streets, hands across America, right? And I don't know if anybody remembers that. All this stuff, all these people out there. And what do? They get shot, they get killed. It's not, just keep it to yourself, okay? Keep it to yourself. You people know who you people are, the one I'm talking about this, all right? Just spread your influence of good or what have you to your immediate, in the immediate direction, within arm's length, okay? Don't start armies and take over things and hate people because of anything. But don't go marching through the streets here, okay? And get the hell off of Facebook. How movies trick your brain into empathizing with characters. Empathizing with characters is a very important thing in a movie. You don't want to always identify with characters because you can't identify with certain characters. You may want to be like certain characters. So if you go see a James Bond movie, guys sit around and they go like, yeah, wow. You just kind of have that feeling like, I feel like that's like, I want to do this, that, get away with murder, be this, there's elements of the character make you feel good. They attract your machismo. Women go see, I don't know what they go see. They go see things like Gorillas in the Mist, and that's old, that Diane lady who sat with the gorillas and showed love and did her thing with the gorilla. What happened to her? There's another case. It's another sad story. She's sharing love among the gorillas, and they kill her. Okay, let's get back to this thing now. When we talk about drama, when we talk about characters, we feel sorry for some, we identify with some, but it's very important to feel something about a character, even if the character's not the greatest person in the world, and you don't necessarily like them. And there's movies, and I didn't know about this. I mean, as I read it, I'm going to read this article by Greg Miller to you, and we're going to go through it with all the things that we think of about this, as we do here at Cotolo Chronicles, and try to figure out some of this stuff and think of other movies that do this. Look, well, these are things we all do, it's not the same in books. I mean, we read books and we understand because the words told right to it. We read the words and things are explained to us. It's not in books. And there's some very, very sorry characters that we need to, that deliver a message, because practically every movie, just like every book, every play is a message. There are people who say things like, I don't want to hear, I don't want messages in my music. I don't want messages in my movies. I don't want messages. There's always a message, even if it's good over bad. And you know, good takes good beats evil in a movie. And there's a cartoon or something like that, or it's the very famous boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl, the famous formula, which in itself became a very popular and wonderful play. If you ever get a chance to see the movie with James Cagney and Pat O'Brien, please do. I hawk these movies, I tout these movies, because they all have such unique characteristics, and they do apply to you and your life. I don't care what you do for a living. I don't care what you want to do. I don't care what you're studying to do. I don't care if you do nothing. All of this stuff affects you because you're a living human being. So we have to be available for this. I was thinking this today while I was washing the dishes. I'm saying to myself, why do people think that Shakespeare is so difficult? Where did that stigma come? Where did that stigma? I just said that. Where did that stigma? How did that stigma become attached? It's just because of the language, because they used to speak English in a different meter, in a different timber. So we're supposed to be. I mean, what is so difficult? To be or not to be. So there it is. Should I kill myself or not kill myself? It's like, what? What? What is so difficult? In fact, it's simpler. To be or not to be. To be. For God's sake, to be. Is there a simpler verb? Hello? Hello? But all these things that happen, these messages are all simple. There's nothing that convoluted. There's a lot of convoluted in the plots of Shakespeare, but there's nothing particularly difficult about it. And you could watch the most incredibly weird movies, abstract movies, and you'll say the messages are clear. Okay. But let's go to Greg Miller's article and see what he has to say about this. Because what scientists are actually helping movie directors and the such to figure this stuff out. Figure what out? Tricking you into emphasizing with characters. Here we go. If you've seen the movie Black Swan, there's a scene near the end of Black Swan where Nina finally loses her grip on reality. That's not the lesbian scene, by the way. She perfectly knows what she's doing in that scene. All right, no. It's my... It was my saloon door. Like a neo-postmodernist. So all the things I'm thinking, not all of them, because they can't, they're all just banging through, they're crashing through the saloon doors, because the saloon represents my subconscious, and the outdoors... my consciousness. Maybe it should be the other way around. I think it should be. Yeah, it should be the other way around, because my consciousness is smaller than my unconscious. What was I thinking? Regardless, the saloon doors make it easy for it to come out, so all the thoughts come out. For those of you who haven't heard about my saloon doors or neo-postmodernism, let's move on. There's a scene in reality. Nina is played by Natalie Portman. Who's not from Brooklyn, I don't think, I didn't see your name. Natalie Portman is the protagonist in this psychological thriller that came out in 2010. I think she won an Academy Award for that, like It Matters. You know, when you read something, all this stuff happens with you too. You just don't clam it up there. It might take you a while to get through a sentence, but what the hell? Natalie Portman plays Nina. She's the protagonist. She's a ballerina stressed to the breaking point by competing with another dancer for the starring role in the Black Swan Ballet. In case you haven't seen it. She begins to hallucinate black feathers poking through her skin, a sign she's becoming the part she's meant to play. And did you think it might be anything else? When you're watching it, what are those black feathers coming through? It's called Black Swan, Swans of Feathers. Okay, should be pretty simple. When people watch this scene, their brain activity bears some resemblance to a pattern that's been observed in people with schizophrenia, according to Talma Hendler, who's a neuroscience at Tel Aviv University in Israel. Where else would Tel Aviv University be located? Talma Hendler, a neuroscientist at Tel Aviv University in Israel, said recently at a Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science get-together. People from the Academy get together. And Talma Hendler, a neuroscientist, talked at this. And here's a quote. You know what's happening to me right now. I'm trying to figure out if Talma Hendler is a male or a female. There's no evidence in the sentences so far. As he said, she said. Talma. Here's what Talma said. We'll just leave it androgynous for the moment. My suggestion to you is that as Nina is getting crazier and crazier, the audience experiences something like schizophrenia. The audience is watching her and experiencing the schizoid feelings that the character is having. And that, and the character did this. It's a movie. It's not a play either. So the character has done this, 10, 20 times before they have the right one take they're using and rehearsing. And then they edited, put other things in there and music and stuff. So you're experiencing something just by watching this collage of moments that were produced by the director and the filmmakers. But Talma says, Talma Hendler, how I love you. How I watch you and your walk. Talma Hendler. Everybody has a handler. That's why we invited you. Talma Hendler. Now, Darren Aronofsky is the director of Black Swan. He was on stage with Hendler. And he took Hendler's statement as a compliment. And then his machine went on and on. Aronofsky has a remarkable knack for putting his audience in the mindset of mentally unstable and anguished characters. If you recall the tortured mathematician in Pi, or Mickey Rourke's battered wrestler, desperate for a comeback in the movie called The Wrestler. Have you seen The Wrestler? The Wrestler is a wonderful movie. And you should all see it because it has a very important message to you personally. I don't even know some of you, and I'm going to point to you and say, yes, you and 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 you. So Darren Aronofsky is known for doing this. There goes my throat again. Okay. Barometric pressure? What is that? Barometer? Is it barometric? Did I just make up another word? Barometric. Credit? Credit? There's pressure. There's a fan blowing and a machine going. And it must be still 80 degrees. What the heck? September. And it's after Labor Day. Can't wear white anymore. The telethon's over. Did anybody see any of the telethon? I mean, what? No Jerry Lewis? Why? What? Does anybody care about this disease anymore is what I want to know. Millions of dollars or billions, maybe billions and billions. Jerry Lewis is from New Jersey, I think. He's not from New York. Okay. Or Brooklyn. So anyway, let's get back to Darren Aronofsky, who's complimented by Talma Hendler for saying that he makes the audience feel like the character is feeling. I'm thinking about The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler. I guess there are times when you feel like that. I know I winced a few times in that particular movie. Asked if he was alarmed by the possibility of giving his audience a temporary taste of psychosis, Aronofsky said, "I'd be thrilled." Aronofsky. Why? Because he's an artist, and what is he doing? He's, did you hear that? That's because I had to wipe my ears of the sweat. It's like July again here.
Here.
See, there's the Brooklyn coming out. Here. No, he likes it, and he should like it. It's as if you were writing, imagine you were writing, no, I'll give you a perfect example that doesn't have such psychological implications. You know the frightening cuts when you watch a movie and the head pops out and bump, and something is surprised all of a sudden, bam, something happens, something jumps out on the screen, and you get scared as if you're in that room or you're, right? And you're nowhere near the scene that is happening, and you get to that, you get scared. They want to scare you, you get scared. That's the kind of stuff. And you should be able to do that to the audience, because you want your audience to feel. Now, in books, you have to do it with words and descriptions and a sense, more than words and description. You have to do the way you put the words together. It's kind of like, in poetry, you have to do it by speaking the words in a certain tempo, lyrically, being dynamic in your presentation. In the theater, you're acting, but you don't have the luxury of editing or close-ups, so it's a whole nother way of expressing, to get the audience to feel something. And if you're Scott Pelley, the CBS Evening News, at the end, you're kind of saying this could be, it could be all over. This, and that's what I get from watching the CBS Evening News with Scott Pelley, when I always say with him exactly what he says at the end of the show. I say it aloud. I know. It's weird. But I do. And it always chokes me up. I used to do it with John Chancellor when he was the anchor of the NBC Evening News when I lived in Hollywood. I used to do that what was it, Orange? South Orange? Orchard? Wow. I don't remember. No, Citrus. Orange is Citrus. That's how I remembered my street. South Citrus. Or North Citrus. I was in South Citrus, right. 8-something South Citrus. Or was it North Citrus? I think it was North Citrus. Anyone out there in L.A. who's somewhere on Willoughby Avenue? That's right near Highland, and there's North Citrus. I think that's North Citrus. Please write to me, fcatolo@yahoo.com. Remind me with North, where you say 853 North Citrus. It would be great if the person who lived at 853 North Citrus, and I think three people could live there, they haven't changed the house because it had three different apartment outlets there. Is it an outlet or inlet? Anybody at 853 North Citrus, please write to me at fcatolo@yahoo.com or tweet me at Frank Catolo. And believe it's North Citrus. Anyway, Aronofsky would be thrilled, said he, that he got his audience to feel it psychotic. Temporarily, of course. Imagine if that image went crazy. You know, there was a movie, a William Castle horror movie. I know Heather Drain would love it. Heather Drain. We've got to have Heather Drain again on. Again on again. Maybe we'll get her on the docket here for September, perhaps. A movie by William Castle. He used to have all these gimmick horror movies called The Tingler. The Tingler. And in this movie, they got, this is in the early 60s, late 50s, late 50s, I think. And they got this, they did something with the seats in the movie theater itself to shake. When the Tingler, which was a, I got to explain the whole thing now. Anyway, you weren't supposed to know. When the Tingler was attacking the character, growing inside, a Tingler grows inside of you. Which is another title right there. A Tingler grows inside of you. And if you don't, I've strayed so far. But in the theater, they got the
In other words, there was an effect. They got the seats to shake. And if you didn't know the seats were shaking, you immediately thought you were, the tingler was growing inside of you, okay? But that's physical. That's physically getting your attention. This is not. This is a character doing this. Handler, let's go back to Talma Handler. Talma Handler studies the neural correlates of human emotions and the role in and their role in mental illness. This is what, in case you've forgotten already, Talma Handler, man or woman turned man turned woman, we don't know, is a neuroscientist at Tel Aviv University. Handler studies the neural correlates. I know, just gave you a chance to like feel the correlation. There's correlates from correlation, right? Of human emotions and their role in mental illness. So your brain correlations, your brain, the things that happen in your brain, the movement in your brain, the thoughts and the things that spark and ignite feelings, and their role in mental illness. Because some people, I guess, have more. That's what happens. I don't know that. And I can't, you know, have somebody on who's... I can, I mean, but I don't have somebody immediately right here to talk to you about that. But Handler says movies... And I want to just say this right now. Talma Handler, I have just found out, is a female. Talma, that was my original feeling, Talma. But Talma could have been a male name. But my original feeling was a Talma Handler was a woman, and Talma Handler is a woman. And Talma says, she says, that movies are a useful way to study how emotions fluctuate in real time and what's going on in the brain as that happens. So they got the stimulus or stimuli. If it's, well, I guess it would be stimuli because it's plural. There's a lot of stimulus in a movie, right? It's not just, there's the music connected to the, then there's the visual, the audio, whatever. And that's real time because they're watching it right there and then. So the brain is going to react to these things real time. And they're just sitting there. So it's not like, you know, in a riot, if you want to study the neural correlates of human emotions in a riot, it's a little difficult because you have to find people and, hey, all right, you stop them and then you get hit. And then the rubber bullets and the gendarme knocking you down and hitting you. Taking you away in a paddy wagon. So Talma. I was going to say Talma. See, I just took the name and changed it. I don't know why. Because my brain is doing weird things. Handler. Let's just call her Handler. Handler is easier. Handler studies the new. All right. Okay, that's what happens. Recently, Handler, who has a team of neuroscientists, has been investigating, the whole team has been investigating networks in the brain that appear to have a role in empathy. She's found, and the whole team has found, evidence for two types of empathy, each tied to a different network of brain regions. One type she calls mental empathy. Okay, I'm moving on. I'm going to make notes here. One type, I've already lost my place, right? One type she calls mental empathy, and that requires you to mentally step outside yourself and think about what another person is thinking or experiencing. So that's happening in your head. And when you're watching a movie, bingo, that's mental empathy. The other type she calls embodied empathy. Let's underline that. We're going to keep these notes. Embodied empathy. Embodied empathy is more visceral in the moment empathy. This is empathy you might feel when you see someone get punched in the guts. You see someone else get punched in the guts. So one is to mentally step outside of yourself and think about what another person is thinking or experiencing. And then embodied empathy is when you really feel what you might feel someone getting punched in the guts. When I talked about the wrestler, I said I winced. Okay, that was embodied empathy. There's a bunch of things that wrestlers do to bleed, to show harm to themselves while they're faking this fighting match. And and then there's also drug taking. There's all sorts of stuff going on. So I had embodied empathy in that, and I had mental empathy for some other emotional things that I don't remember the character's name. At the Academy event where Ms. Handler spoke, she presented fMRI brain scan data that she happened to bring along. I guess, what do? Do you put that in your, suitcase? Let's see. I have my suit, my pantsuit, and I have my bras and undies. I have to have room for my fMRI brain scan data. I don't know. What is it? Maybe it's on a flash drive or something. See, these days it doesn't matter. You could bring a whole library and a couple. You could fill up one suitcase with flash drives, those little things, right? That's 16 zip drives and those other ones, the little ones you buy that you put in there. They got gigabytes on them as 16, 17 gigabytes for $10, $20, somewhere. God, it's amazing. The amount of information one person can transport these days. At the Academy event, she got the MRI brain scan data. The team had collected all of this. They collected it as subjects watched several emotional movie clips. So they got this data while people were watching emotional movie clips. Now, one clip was from the 1998 drama The Stepmom. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from the first hour break. We're going to find out what happened to these, we're going to read to you the results of these brain scans. People watching movies and having, what did she call them? Networks that, right, okay. The correlates of human emotions and their role in mental illness. I don't know if this is how mental illness, but this is how these things affect your brain and your feelings and what you go through physically when you're just watching something. I didn't go through anything. I gotta go through it physically. Yes, you go through it physically when you watch this stuff. Maybe that's why some people, there's always movies they say, oh, I always cry at the end of that. Well, that's, hey, hello. There's an emotion right there. My name is Frank Catolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show, that would neither make you cry nor laugh nor maybe make you thirsty or hungry. I don't know. But I am chronicling here as we go into the second hour of this September 4th Chronicle, Catolo Chronicles. That's what I do as I'm chronicling how movies trick your brain into empathizing with characters. And we're scientists are now looking at this and learning stuff about the brain. The thing about this is that an artist knows almost intrinsically, not almost intrinsic, I could be almost intrinsic, intrinsically knows the beat and the tempo of drama, and how to do that, because they want to relay something to the audience, so whether it be sadness or joy, grief, or celebration, whatever the case might be, all of that stuff. In other words, the author, the director, the person, they don't go out and get people and do brain scans. They just don't. We'll be back shortly. Stay with us, will you?
The Toll of Khan Consonants. The Internet Talk Show from the Neo Postmodern World.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
This is the Jigman Freud, yes.
How are you?
Better known as Jiggy Jaguar.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
And I'm a good clodder.
Reminding everyone within earshot.
Lots of disposable income.
That Frank Cotolo's new book, Molotov Memoirs, is now available at blurb.com.
I'm going to write that down.
I know there is not one of you out there that ever trusts a word I say.
I'm George W. Bush.
But this time I mean it when I tell you.
This is probably good.
That you will not be sorry.
Everybody loves you and so do I.
I love being here.
You're not going to be sorry when you buy and read Molotov Memoirs by Frank Cotolo.
It's not about me.
A copy or two or more. You may regret knowing me, so go to blurb.com and buy.
I'm Frank Cotolo. This is probably good.
But you will never regret buying Molotov Memoirs. So go to blurb.com and buy.
Well, I talked to Condi and asked her to call Andy.
And Cast Radio ate my balls. And I loved it.
Everybody loves you and so do I.
You're right.
Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
And all was Benjamin Franklin wise.
So you actually think electricity can pass through metal? Ha! Ben Franklin, go fly a kite.
Excellent idea. Where are my keys?
Besides the bifocals, Ben invented the Franklin
Up
stone.
You go!
The odometer.
Whoa!
Oh, and the lightning rod. Ingenuity, pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Chances are someone you know will be affected by heart disease or stroke this year. It could be your neighbor, a friend, a member of your family. It could even be you. That's why the Heart and Stroke Foundation needs your support. Your generous donations help to fund life-saving research, patient support in your community, and initiatives that help more and more Canadians survive heart disease or stroke every year. Donate online at heartandstroke.ca. The Heart and Stroke Foundation. We create survivors.
This year, more than 172,000 people will be told they have lung cancer.
Lung cancer.
60% will wonder why.
Why?
As they never smoked or quit smoking years ago. Lung cancer will kill 163,000 people this year. More people than breast, prostate, colon, liver, and kidney cancers combined, making it by far America's number one cancer killer.
Cancer killer.
But there is hope. New treatments are available and more are on the way. The Lung Cancer Alliance is working to focus attention and research on lung cancer to develop early detection tools and more treatment options. Lung Cancer Alliance is leading the charge as the only organization solely dedicated to providing support, resources, and a voice for people touched by lung cancer and those at risk for the disease. Join us in the fight against lung cancer. The time has come. No more excuses. No more lung cancer. To learn more, visit lungcanceralliance.org or call 1-800-298-2436.
Hey guys, I'm Jess.
And I'm Lisa from the Veronica Cares for Rad.
We see a lot of things at gigs, mostly people having a good time and having a few drinks. But what we'd hate to see is someone getting behind the wheel after they've been drinking. Being even a little bit over the limit makes it too easy to lose control and possibly lose your life or that of a friend. So if you plan to drink, plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver who won't drink or stay the night at a friend's place. Remember, music lives and you should too.
A public service message brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
If you've ever spotted a barred owl, a Blanding's turtle, or a dragon's mouth orchid, then you're one of the lucky few. Because the opportunities to spot these marvels are getting fewer. The more we build, the more nature is disappearing. But you can help. Visit OntarioNature.org. The pulse of Ontario isn't in its wildlife, woodlands, and wetlands. It's in the hearts of the people who protect them. Show you care. For lots of little reasons.
I want to tell you to do one thing, though, and if you'll pay attention to me, it might save your life. I want you to buckle up and live. Seatbelts and shoulder harnesses can be your second chance. Now, if you never had an accident, you could be next, because you gamble every time you get in your car. Now, you cut down the odds against you getting killed, you understand, by buckling up your seatbelt or your harness. Use them as advised by your car's manufacturer, and have your passengers use them, too. Automobile accidents can be deadly. Be sure you get that second chance. Buckle up and live.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports, and news, it's radio. The people choose. Everybody's swinging to the swinging voice of radio, the people's choice. Big fry, small fry, dawn to dawn, it's radio that turns them on. Swinging, singing, a million sounds you want to hear. It's a landslide every year. Everybody's dialing in the smiling voice of radio, the people's choice. East Coast, West Coast, in between, it's radio that makes the scene.
冰球到冰球，小村到大市， 咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心， 是 Cthulhu Chronicles.
Yeah, 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 that's Ice Cap, the Ice Cap in Mandarin, for all you people listening. I'm just doing math here, believe this or not. I'm trying to... God, I can't believe I try to get precise on some of these time things. My name is Frank Cotolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. I'm Cotolo, and I'm chronicling. I want to mention what I didn't mention in the beginning of the show while we're doing these promos and things, and that is that the great online magazine, For Culture, number 14, is now available at forculture.com. That's F-O-U-R. Don't put a four. Don't put the digit. F-O-U-R. Culture. One word. For culture. .com. Number 14 is there. And it includes an exclusive and brand new, never before read Frank Cotolo story, along with some other great columnists that we have there. The RSD and Daria. And some other people. And there's lots of articles in there, too, about cutting-edge culture, pop culture things, nouns. Nouns, because a noun, everything's a noun. There's a lot of noun stories in there. and the 14 issues, I've been in 14 issues, and I will be in as many issues as they want me to be. And I'm available to do in my life. Those, and speaking of new stories, of course, I did announce last week that I am working now with, and will soon be working with T. Stephen Gesick. We will team up for 3M, more Molotov memoirs. I don't know exactly where we're going to publish it. We'll let you know. It'll be a digital version. Maybe it'll just be a digital version if you don't want to. I don't think it's the price, though. That's the thing about it. I don't think it's the price. it's the promotion and the, and just the way people, I don't know. It could be, hey, you know, it got great reviews and stuff, but maybe people don't want to laugh. Maybe they want to read, about, it's like the person who, really loved my epic, comic novel, which has not been published and may never, The Complete and Unabridged History of Japan. They loved it, but they said, where are the vampires? Where are the teenage bloodsuckers? where are they? I don't know. It doesn't matter. This is just the way it goes. But I'll be working on that, and there'll be stories in that book that are even refreshed and new, even if you read some of them here and there. They've been refreshed over the years. So there's more Molotov Memoirs, which, of course, is the book that is the closest writing I could do. Wait, what is it? It's the closest thing to a biography I could write without telling the truth. So there are truths and not truths, and you figure it out. Doesn't matter. It's entertaining. Are there messages? Sure, there are messages. They're all messages, as we are speaking here right now. As we will spend the next 50 minutes, at least, on Greg Miller's article, How Movies Trick Your Brain Into Empathizing with Characters. He's just the messenger of this message, which has to do with Talma Handler, a neuroscientist at Tel Aviv University, who's studying how the brain reacts because people watch movies. The emotional clips in movies. We were just going to talk about her and her team's results from a brain scan data compilation. Various movies. One clip they showed, 1998, a movie called The Stepmom, with Susan Sarandon. She plays a divorced woman who's been diagnosed with terminal cancer. Ooh, we should move this over here a little bit so I can... Yeah. In this particular scene that they showed, she's talking to her son and telling him she'll always be looking out for him. She's saying it like, you know, from heaven, because she's going to die soon. You know, this sad thing. That she's telling her son, I'm going to die. I'm not going to be here. I know I'm not going to be here. Like we know that. We all know that. But we don't know it unless... We don't always know it on a time frame thing. But again, this movie, she does that. Now, Ms. Handler, played this clip along with a corresponding video that showed how subjects' brains' activity was changing. She's talking, by the way, and she's showing the results of this at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science meeting. So she plays the clip of the movie, that particular movie, with a corresponding video that showed how the subject's brain activity was changing through the data. The scene primarily engaged the mental empathy network, she said. And on the screen, blue dots appeared, representing parts of the frontal, temporal, and you know, parietal? Is that it? How do you say that? Parietal cortex. Parietal cortex. If I was a cortex, I would be parietal cortex. Okay. Parietal cortex. That makeup, what did she say? The blue dots appeared representing parts of the frontal, temporal, and parietal cortex that make up this network of mental empathy. The network of the mental, you're listening to the Mental Empathy Network. I'm Frank Cotolo. That what she did? Yeah. Okay, so she said the blue dots appeared by blue lines connecting the blue dots, she said. Indicated that activity in these regions is coordinated. Essentially, that parts of the network are talking to each other a lot during the scene. Parts of your brain are talking to one another to incite this emotion. It's the brain is getting the stuff together so that you'll feel something. So the blue dots, wow. So the blue dots, and there's blue lines connecting the blue dots. The blue dots, of course, the frontal, temporal, and the parietal cortex. Parietal cortex, right? And when the lines go there, they're connecting. So it means those parts of the brain are talking to one another, because you have parts of the brain that talk to one another, coordinate, orchestrate feelings, actions. You know, your brain is it's always working when you're alive. So she said that's what's happening. In another emotional moment, in this scene, this particular scene from the stepmom, the son tells his mother how much he loves her, and she hugs him. Now, this is more touchy-feely and less cerebral, because she's not just talking about this thing called death. And the feelings aren't out there, and the way you try to comprehend non-existence and, you know, it's all that stuff that people are all akin to when they think about it. So there's this touchy feeling thing when he says he loves her and they touch. Now, there was a difference in the subject's brains, just like there was a difference in those two particular emotions. The blue dots had faded and a network of green dots and lines had become conspicuous. This was evidence, Hendler says, that the embodied empathy network contributed more to the emotions subjects felt during the scene. Oh, the emotions that subjects felt during the scene. Okay, so that was stepping outside of yourself, right? Is that, the embodied empathy network contributed more to the emotions subjects felt during the scene. The subjects were the people. So that contributed more. So it stopped. It stopped. It changed. The blue dots went away and the green dots came in. Based on experiments in which people rate their own emotional state as they watch movie clips. So they say, maybe they give you a thing, a 1 to 10. How sad was this? You know, how stinky was this? How much hurt? You know, whatever, the various feelings. People rate their own emotional state. Hendler concludes that both types of empathy, mental and, what's the other kind? Embodied, mental and embodied. I'm sure glad I underlined them. Both types of empathy can have a powerful influence on what people actually experience. It influences. So that means to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that when something like that happens and you see it really happening, or if you're doing it, and I hope you don't have to tell, I hope you don't get terminal cancer and then you have to tell someone, you know, look, I'll always be around or something or whatever goes on, there'll be me and I'm you got, and that you'd be feeling that, it influences how you feel when you do it. Or if somebody says that to you and you have to say, well, I love you. That watching the movie, if it hadn't happened to you, when it does happen to you, it influences you. That's what it means to me. It's a striking concept that I understand deeply because I grew up mostly alone and and that doesn't even matter. The thing is, I grew up with these experiences that were generated from books and movies and TV, stories told to me from, you know, the literature of pop culture. That's how I grew up. And I think it has a lot to do with why I'm even talking about this right now. But that, all that stuff I was reading about and the stuff, the input that was, that what my mind, my brain, I guess, we're talking about brains here, my brain was absorbing was fiction. It was just, and I was, and it was actually programming me. My mind was talking, it was talking to each other. My frontal, my temporal, and my parietal cortex. I think it's partial, isn't it? I don't think I'm pronouncing that correct. Parietal. 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 How else could it be? I like parietal cortex. Parietal, if a parietal cortex had a huma huma huma. You see, even that, even doing the stupid song when I hear the syllables, one part of my brain talks to another, that the line goes across and it goes, song, song with that meter, with that rhythm, with that dun 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 dun. See? Okay? Okay. So I understand that at a very deep, intense level, having almost experienced, or having trained my brain to experience things that would happen later in life through movies, through drama. Let's just say drama, whether even if it's comedy, it doesn't matter, it's drama. Through comedy, tragedy, all the things, through songs, which are stories, and cartoons, and stories told to me when I sat on the knee. You know, sit on a knee. Well, you know, when I was a kid and they told me stories. And that's what it says here. Based on experiments in which people rate their own emotional state as they watch movie clips, and they're just movies, Hendler concludes that both types of empathy can be a powerful influence on what people actually experience. An influence. It's telling you, it's in your part. You know, your brain is talking, when your brain is talking to the other part of the brain, when these things are going on, they're not, and there's no judgment involved. When we did other shows about brain stuff, and how the brain doesn't judge, the brain doesn't deal with these philosophical things. The brain just talks to one another about doing things. It doesn't say, that's why when, you know, you got a bad brain, because the part of your brain will tell another part of your brain, and you know, to murder or to do something horrible because something's wrong up there. But one part of the brain is not telling the other part of the brain. This is where you get into Freudian stuff with the id, the superego, and okay, how the emotional stuff works on the brain. But the brain isn't judging. The brain isn't saying, wait a second, murder? I don't think so. Or hurt that person? Say this to that person? I don't think you should say that. You'll hurt them. The brain doesn't care. The brain's just working as this machine. You know, I don't know if it sounds like that. I don't know what it sounds like. I don't even know if the saloon doors sound like that. I'm kind of personifying these things so that we could, even personifying them. I'm making them, that's not into people, but I mean, I'm kind of making them into symbols that we understand and know, so you could visualize it and then get an idea from there. But the brain isn't saying things. That's why, I'm not even going to go over into that area where I was going to go. I'm going to stay exactly. Your brain, I don't care what it is or what the brain has no morality. You know, you feed it stuff and then maybe it has, unless you feed it that stuff, this is why, remember the kid, the son of the Nazi? A couple of years ago, there was this kid, and then there were neo-Nazis. He was a kid and his father taught him all these horrible things. I mean, horrible things about Jews and people and Negroes. You know, this white supremacy crap. You know, and he taught the kid that. And the kid became this little monster. But the kid had some kind of conflict. And it might have been, we don't know, it might have been because his brain had read other things or he'd seen other movies or cartoons and things. Maybe he snuck when his father said, don't watch that because it's got a moral message you didn't want to. But he felt it and he found it. And then so what does he do when one day kills his father? It's like, I've had enough of you. Boom. Well, the brain was saying, let's settle this. Here's a way to settle this. Okay, let's kill the old man. It doesn't sit there. The brain doesn't go, wait a second, that's patricide. Do you realize how sick? And that'd be, what kind of sick behavior you're talking about doing? The brain doesn't do that. The brain doesn't go sick or not sick. No, the brain goes, here's how we solve it, okay, kid? His brain went, get the gun. You know your father showed you how to use the gun. He tells you about killing, so kill him. And just knock him off, and then you'll feel better. And that's what the brain didn't care. The kid might be going to prison for nothing. The brain didn't say, you know what's going to happen now. God's going to get you for doing that, and especially because it's your fault. Nothing. You hear what I'm saying? Nothing. If you program the stuff, and I'm acting like I know, but I think this is why Tarzan, look, I keep telling you this, Tarzan was raised by apes, and then it comes a point where he can see himself, and he goes, where's my hair? I feel horrible. I don't even look like them. I'm the black sheep of the ape family. Look at me. I look horrible. He's never seen a human being. He's grown up with apes. Mommy ape, daddy ape. He only knows his ape talk, ape behavior. And he's like, oh, God, I'm such a bad-looking ape. I'm a horrible-looking person. He's totally programmed. You think his brain is sitting there saying things like, no, don't worry, because you're a man. You're a human, so you just worked out that you grew up here. I think this is the way the brain works, what I'm saying. So the brain is telling you to feel bad or do this or do that. You're inputting this stuff. Now, you know, any way you think I'm incorrect, please, if you're a specialist or you know someone, tell them to write to me at fguitaro@yahoo.com and say, Frank, you're full of crumb cake. And I will, you know, tell you why. And then you could be on the show and explain to me what I said wrongly. Wrongly? Who's Lee? I said it wrongly. In the scene from The Black Swan, let's go back to The Black Swan. Not Nina making love to Moini Katkarich, or whatever her name, the one from that 70s show. It says, in the scene from Black Swan where she has that, she breaks down, she has that, and make people start to feel psychotic. Despite Nina's disturbing actions, which can be seen, it's the blue, which is the mental empathy network that dominates, with the green, which is the embodied empathy network, flickering to life only on occasion. As when Nina pulls a feather from her back. It's the pattern relying more heavily on the mental empathy network, even in the face of this visceral experience that Handler has seen in schizophrenic patients. It's as if they're having to think through the emotional impact of situations that other people grasp more intuitively and automatically, she said. So the people who were, so you're watching Nina and the character, it's not Natalie Portman, it's not really going through, she's acting. It's called acting. She's acting. And she's grasping it intuitively and automatically because she's going crazy. Now the brain, her brain, the character's brain is not going, nah, you're crazy. That's crazy. Let's go this way. It's talking to the other part of the brain. Come on, let's go this way. She's got feathers. Okay. Get me? See where we're going with this? Here's where things get a little tricky. I knew that Handler was going to pull the confusing card. What would that be? What would she be playing? She'd be playing the complex card. As a club, what would be the most complex? Okay, let's just look at it, okay? Here's where things get a little tricky. The division of labor among different brain regions is totally neat and clean. Listen to that again. The division of labor among different brain regions is never totally neat and clean. So it's like one part of the brain is doing more work than the other, or it's like they don't share the work. Each region has multiple jobs And the scientists don't necessarily know what, doesn't know all of them. It's a bad sentence, Mel. You said what all of them are. Bad sentence. Bad sentence. Beep, 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 beep. Let's cross it out. Let's fix it. Let's correct, Mr. I don't know where, I have no idea what part of my brain tells me to do this crap. But that's what happens. See, this is the sentence says, the multiple jobs and scientists don't necessarily know what all of them are. It doesn't necessarily know all of them. See? Doesn't know all of them. That is the multiple jobs. It says multiple jobs. Why does it have to say all of them are? Why don't you learn to write? Why don't people learn to write? Okay. Now, since they don't know all the jobs that this particular part of the brain is capable of doing, then that makes it difficult to say with a high degree of confidence what a given region or network is doing whenever it lights up on the blue dots and the red dots in the mental empathy or the embodied empathy. The ME or the EE. In fact, Aronofsky, you'll remember he's the director of Black Swan, he suggested an alternative interpretation of this. Maybe the audience is using their mental empathy network more during that scene because they're trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Coming from a director, they're trying to figure out what's going on. She's, wait a second, is this real or not? We're seeing what she's seeing. Of course, the other characters are not seeing. She's maybe, you know, that's the, they're not seeing the her, she's plucking out a feather that she sees, she feels, but the other characters don't. It's kind of like in The Topper. Has anyone read or saw the movies or television shows? Topper? George and Marion Kirby, they are the ghosts, and only Topper can see them. Even when they have enough endoplasm to be opaque. See, nobody else can see them, but the audience can see them. Because if the audience couldn't see them, then it would be like the play with the white rabbit, Harvey. Nobody sees the white rabbit but the main character who has the white rabbit as a pal. Then you're like everyone else, and not like the character himself. As in the Wilfred, the TV show that recently concluded about the guy who invented the dog, and the dog is personified. Nobody else sees the dog that way, but the audience sees the dog that way. So you experience what you're getting involved in what he's experiencing, as opposed to trying to figure it out. But Aronofsky thinks that maybe it's different. Maybe the network's going, what's happening? Why is that going out? Now, what does she say? He said, the audience is going, what's happening? She really transforming into a swan? Says in them, some people might actually be asking that because we're seeing that. Is she really turning into a swan? Now, if you watch this movie and you get to that point, and you think she's really turning into a swan, you you didn't come in to see a science fiction movie. Hey, Aronofsky, why don't you have a little bit of respect for your audience? How can anyone sit there and watch this and go, oh, I see. Here's what happens now. Okay? We've been led to believe she's going a little crazy, but actually she's turning into a swan. And maybe that's why everyone's fighting for that part. They all want to be the black swan. That's crazy. I don't think the audience thinks that. Ah, come on, Aronofsky. Come on. So he thinks that maybe they're slowly discovering that we're really going to go for it. That's just idiotic. I'm surprised at that. I would have said that if I was writing this article, aside from the fact that I wouldn't end sentences in prepositions or are or is, I wouldn't do that. I would say, Aronofsky, I said, let's not put that in this article. Let's not say that you don't feel your audience is smart enough. Let's say that, let's not do that, because that's just dumb. I'm surprised at that. And I'm surprised this guy put it in. You know why? Because that particular paragraph is just in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it comes after the fact that we don't know the multiple jobs that these parts of the brain are performing. But still, I mean, just be a normal person. You don't even have to be a literate. Is it a literate? Is that such a thing? Is a literate? You don't have to be. You don't have to have this academic understanding of drama. If you're watching The Black Swan, and you suddenly think she's really turning into a swan at the end, and that's not just that she's going crazy and having these hallucinations, then I think you should leave the theater and go back and watch the Sci-Fi Network. You know, maybe you should be watching something that's different. That's, you know, obviously. I am shocked at that. Shocked is the wrong word. That's very, very strong. Speaking of shocked, my name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name we're doing the title of this show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. And I imagine that a number of people who were listening said, you had to say that. What other show does somebody question what they see, what they read, what they say, what is being said, or how it's being said, or what the topic? No one does, because everyone seems to have an opinion and know what's going on in talk radio. And they're all full of stuff. And the stuff you know they're full of ain't the kind of stuff that you make into wedding rings or fine jewelry. No, not at all. Not at all. Wow, I'm just, that put me aside. Let's go through the rest of the article. Well, there's not much more anyway. Then we can talk about other movies. Oh boy, can we, Frank? Despite that fact that his frequent writing partner and co-producer Ari Handel has a PhD in neuroscience, Aronofsky says they don't talk about brains as they're planning scenes. Remember I told you before how there's something intrinsic in the director, the writer, the artist? Something intrinsic is happening. You're trusting certain elements of dynamics. And you've learned those the same way you've learned these emotions. You've learned the technique the same way by watching other dramas, comedies, all this stuff that's coming through you. That you're absorbing. And then you're releasing your writing, you're performing, you're doing your own interpretation. And that means that your specific and unique personality is in league with this, with all the different things and presenting it a different way. Okay. So anyway, Ari Handel, who writes with Aronofsky, Ari Handel, 20 dwarves doing handstands on the carpet, 20 dwarves, Ari Handel doing handstands, that's the hand that got me, okay, they don't talk about brains, is it? Of course they don't talk about brains. They do, however, think a lot about how to manipulate the audience's emotions. Editing, again, scenes where they stop, where they begin, getting the audience to see. Here's what he says, and this is a quote from Aronofsky, who had that stupid idea before. We're always thinking about how to get an emotional state moment by moment, how to get into an emotional state moment by moment, and how to bring as much of the audience along with us. That's what he said. Now, here's an example. In Requiem for a Dream, a movie I don't know anything about, do you? Requiem for a Dream. It's a movie that follows four people unraveled by addiction. Doesn't say what kind of addiction. Aronofsky said one strategy he used to get people into an emotional state was to shift from wide shots at the beginning of the movie to tighter shots as it progressed to convey an increasingly subjective sense of what the characters were experiencing. So you actually physically got closer to the character with these close shots. And you were distance looking at them from far away. Got a lot more personal with the close shots. I quote him again, there's always a theory of where the camera is and why it's there. I don't even know if that is as good. It should be positioned. Of where the camera is positioned and why it's positioned there. Here's the end of the article, by the way. That is the end of the article. But it does say this. This story is part of a series, and it ends a series of articles, and I'm going to find more of these articles, and we'll talk about them. Maybe we'll even get Dr. Waldar. That'd be a good topic, I think. Gary. Dr. Gary. It's not named Dr. Gary. It's Dr. Gary Popoli. Do you know I had to reach for that name? What's wrong with me? It's cluttered. See, once in a while, I don't know, maybe it was always like that. I keep thinking this has something to do with age. I don't remember things specifically, and I have to reach for them. And I don't know if that's it. I just think, you know, my mind is way more open than it was in years gone by. This story is part of a series about how scientists are studying cinema for clues about the nature of perception and how that science might aid filmmakers as they pursue their art. I think it's more the other way around. They're gonna, you know, this would really, forget about helping filmmakers. How about you study it so that you could help people understand their emotions? And people don't do that, most people. And how they, which ones are being ignited by bad stuff and old stuff, and which things are really good we should embrace. And why we shouldn't cover up the bad stuff with cuckoo sunshine juice. I make myself laugh. Do you like that? I love when I make myself laugh. I love when other people make me laugh, but I love when I make myself laugh. Cuckoo sunshine. I'm going to write this down. I don't know why that's so funny, but it is. I think I'm going to get a product. And maybe that could be, in itself, a title of a book. Cuckoo sunshine juice. It's the stuff that you tell yourself to try to douse bad things. I got a bad feeling. You have a bad feeling? Yeah. Oh, I don't know how to get rid of it. Instead of feeling it, because it's going to leave and it's not going to stay with you. Nothing's going to stay with you, even if it goes to hide in your subconscious. Even if, okay? So just go through it. But no, someone probably says, you know, hold on a second. Let me get you some cuckoo sunshine juice. And you'll feel better. Because everyone feels better with cuckoo sunshine juice. Oh, you might be feeling bad one day. You don't know what to do or say. That's when it's time to really let loose and get some cuckoo sunshine juice. There's the commercial. It's time to really get loose. Have yourself some cuckoo sunshine juice. Yes, cuckoo sunshine juice. Don't worry about the bad feeling you're having right now. Why, you can just wash it away with some cuckoo sunshine juice. Comes in 5 flavors. My name is Frank Atolmo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show.
Bingo.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
Right.
Hi, Cthulhu Chronicles.
That's right. Cuckoo. It's spelled cuckoo. It's with a C, right? It's a hard C. Coo, no. Coo. Cuckoo. It's not a K. K would be Coco. Remember Coco the Clown? He came out of the inkwell? No, you don't. I know a lot of people don't remember that. You're way too young to remember Coco the Clown. I never liked him. I'm saying I liked him. I didn't like him. I thought it was stupid. He came out of the... Well, he's a clown, you know, and... The thing that's bad about clowns is that you look at them and you say, oh, God, and the guy's going to want to do something funny. Right? There's no such thing as a serious clown. Even Emmett Kelly, if you remember him, and you know, you should be writing down in your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook, and at this point, I don't care whether you use Mead or knockoffs, because the Mead people weren't as nice to me this year as they were 2 years ago. So you can use anything. Get the knockoffs. I don't give a crap. All right, you don't have to use the Meads, but write it down. Emmett Kelly. Because, you know, later on, you take these, you write these things down there, look them up at YouTube, look it up on YourTube, Google, Goggle, Yahoo, Ask.com, Mr. Jeeves. I used to be asking if you asked Mr. Jeeves, and they did away with Mr. Jeeves. What happened with that? You think that there were people out there who were butlers who said, that's horrible. That's really a, what do they call that? I'm just racist. Would be racist or would be demeaning to butlers. Ask Mr. Jeeves. Hello? Is there a butler's union or is there a, why did they get rid of Mr. Jeeves? Why did they put him there in the first place? Why didn't they just call it Ask? And what's with Aronofsky? How could you, I can't trust any movie now with this guy. Because he thought the audience might be thinking that the character Nina was really turning into a swan. That's just stupid. Am I saying that people... No, if any... I don't... No, I'm not... No, I am not demeaning the audience. He was demeaning the audience to think that somebody would think that. They know they're not watching science fiction. They're watching a movie called The Black Swan. And if they've been watching, they see all the things that's been happening to Nina. Stuff that supports the fact that she's going a little wacky. Not the lesbian part, though. Wow. You can get me a Twitter at Frank Cotolo. And at Daily Meds. Hey, let's do that again. Let's do a promo for that again. Daily Meds with a Z. Go to at Daily Meds. Every day you will get, and believe me, it's not cuckoo sunshine juice. Every day you will get a saying, a phrase, a quote. Is this a short? I don't even know what to call it. And it's just gonna get to one part of life. Living and the pursuit of happiness. You know what? It's the pursuit of happiness. It's a journey, okay? It's not the sit in the big well of happiness. It's not stop and be, it's the pursuit of happiness. It's a journey. It's work to get to anywhere happy, okay? At Daily Meds, MEDZ, and every day, something will, it doesn't cost you anything. And I know that price doesn't matter to you, whether it's, because if it did, then you would buy, then when Molotov Memoirs went digital, or you could still get licensed the skill digitally, you would go there and you would buy them for $2.99, $3.99. So it's not price. So Daily Meds is for nothing. You're a victim of my own predictions too, because I said, you know, everybody wants everything for free on the internet. So who am I to scream about not being able to sell books on the internet when people who've had recording careers and have made millions of dollars can't make a penny anymore of their music? So who am I? You know, who am I to sit here and go, oh, we can't make a dime? Yeah, that's ridiculous. I should sell snake oil. And you know what snake oil used to be the phrase for, and it's not, for, not the euphemism, mind you. Was that a euphemism? No, because it's not making it good, it's making it worse. What's the opposite of a euphemism? Maybe it's cuckoo sunshine juice. Now it's, perhaps, can't figure it all out. I can't figure any of it out. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from the same city as Joan Rivers. But my name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. September will bring another only three shows providing we live through September. Hey, you know? You think it's getting late, but it's later than you think. Wake up, it's night. What happens next week? Next week we're on, and it's Patriots Day. The 11th, it's September 11th. Now, you know what's going to happen. people going to be asking me, are you going to do a September 11th show? Per se. Yes, I'm going to do a show on September 11th. You do a show about 9/11? I was going to say 7/11. Yeah, I'll do a show about 7/11. I'll do a show about the convenience store. Are you going to show about 9/11? Are you going to... It probably will have nothing at all to do with 9/11, per se, 9/11. Because, I mean, I don't know what it'll be. Okay? But it does fall on the 11th, which is also now Patriot Day. Not Patriots Day. Patriot Day. Be a patriot. Individual. It's not Patriots Day. Oh, patriots. Everybody's a patriot. Patriot. It's not plural Patriots Day. It's singular Patriot Day. Patriot Day. It's a good day to get some cuckoo sunshine juice. Okay, at Daily Meds, at Frank Cotolo. Frank Cotolo on, hey, Facebook. I still have room. I think they allow, how many do they allow? I don't know. How many people do they allow to be friends? I stopped and thought about it. I don't know. I've never read it. I don't remember it. Some people are actually emailing me. That's what that little tweet is in the background. I just want you all to know this. Summer will end, and we're going to be cold down here, which is going to be great. It's going to be, I mean, wearing sweaters, and I'll be thinking about when it was warm. That's what you do. That's that stupid brain of ours. You know? So I don't know what we're going to do next week. I do know that very soon we're going to have more information about Tom Savino's show, which will be following my show here at SRN Live. Savino Viritis. Viritis sounds like a disease. I got Savino Viritis. Savino Veritas. Maybe it's Veritas. Is it Viritis? Or is it... It's in everybody. Are you ready? What is it? Parietal cortex? I can't. You see? One moment to the next. I just did this show. We're on our way out. What else can you do? I don't know what else you could do. If you want, if you have any more dead comics, please send me their names. We'll add them onto the roster of the Dead Comic Society. Next week, perhaps. Who knows? Maybe Jeremy Long will be here live. Maybe we'll have a guest on Skype. Maybe we'll be, I know we'll try to be selling books and doing all sorts of things at the same time. But as you go watch movies now, just take this stuff with you, as I always suggest. That's why I tell you to write things down. The show should not end. It should not be over just because it ends. The broadcast ends. And don't forget, you can listen to this show and any number of others. Any number, there's a specific number. It's not any number. Oh, really? On 1,000 others? No, I don't think it's 1,000. On a certain number of other stations that replay this broadcast, including, what should I do? Go there? You go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Maybe I should just say hello to each and every one of you. And all you stations who do run this show, please, if you need custom liners where I advertise, you know, I promote the show, send me a request and send me some liners and the name of your station and everything. And then we could even plug in things like you're listening to Cotolo Chronicles on KVAVAV station, the KVAVAV station. We could do that too. And if you go and if you Google Cotolo Chronicles, you'll find a whole bunch of stuff and you'll find other stations. I don't know. I just want you to support independent alternative broadcasting so that we could, you know, all those guys, they're the talk show guys, they're on TV and the radio and the syndicated rate and the stuff, you know, on rail. They're rich enough. They could retire now. They should be able to retire if we get rid of them. You know, this is the gas bags. You see, I don't do, that's what I don't pride myself in anything, but I don't sit here and talk about stuff that I can't do anything about. I could do something about my brain. I actually think these things, and I know you do too. So we perform this stuff. We do this stuff all the time, whenever it is we talk about on this show. So I don't have to sit back and complain about what this government's doing and that people are doing and this guy's doing. I don't know why you want to hear all that stuff. Anyway, let's get rid of those guys. Let's get them all out of here. And you know them. And the gals. There's some gals there, too. Get rid of them. Tired. This is just junk. And you know what? If everybody who had an opinion had a show, then everybody would have a show. Because everybody has an opinion. Personally, I'm doing away with all my opinions. I don't need a doctor. Who's my doctor? Doctor, I'd like to get rid of my opinions. I mean, you know, I don't really want, unless I can have an opinion that has substance, not one that I make emotional. You know, I wonder if this, you know, the same thing happens when people watch these TV shows talk shows and listen to talk radio or watch these TV shows with these talk people, regardless of their agenda. Left, right, middle, it doesn't matter. They probably have embroiled empathy. It's not embroiled, for God's sakes. What is it? It's embedded? No, embodied empathy. They feel this stuff. You feel this stuff. And they have it, and they have mental empathy. Correct? Yeah. It just ignites these things in your brain. Gotta clear it. Let all the bad. You say bad. Let all the things you think that are just passing by, let those thoughts out. See where they go. See how they fly. See what they mean to you when it actually goes on. Here's. And then you won't have to buy cuckoo sunshine juice. I don't remember the theme, by the way. I'm going to have to go back in this show to memorize it. Now, people tomorrow will be walking around singing the cuckoo sunshine juice song, and I'm not gonna remember it unless I hear it. And there are words and everything there, and you all can enjoy it, and do it. Enjoy it and do it. You all can enjoy the cuckoo sunshine juice song and sing it. I'm not gonna ask for anything. You don't want to buy books. Don't buy my books. Whatever you want to do, do it. Just, you know. For God's sakes, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Wake up. It's night. I'm Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. It's Cotolo Chronicles. I've been chronicling. Think about it. We'll follow this series. We'll have another show in a week from now. And everything is going to be all right. Did you hear what I said? Everything is going to be all right. Cuckoo sunshine juice. Sunshine juice. Cuckoo sunshine. Hey, it fits. Go buy cuckoo sunshine juice. You got cuckoo sunshine juice? You can do it from there, huh? Cuckoo sunshine juice. See? I'm the third man. I am indeed the third man, because I'm that voice in the night or in the morning, because some stations play us in the morning, or if you're overseas. Oh gosh, let's not get into that. Let's just say goodnight, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be. Neo-postmodernists, infomaniacs. The Bard of Broadcasting will soon be leaving you, sooner than you think, because it's about that time. Y2K plus 14. I wish you good health. I hope you good health. Don't say wish. I hope you have good health. I hope everything's going to be fine. I hope we meet each other again here soon. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile. I said where you're located. Okay, I'll leave you now. Although my brain does, I have nothing more to say.